Your Steve Jones Show podcast will start shortly. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Brewers Outlet, your beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great Friday to each and every one of you. Great to have you with us on the show today. This will be a lot of fun. Brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. All right, you got a lot of football this weekend. Penn State at Pitt coming up tomorrow night. You've got the Steelers in action taking on the Browns. Eagles already won 18-12 last night. You need to be fully stocked for the weekend. That means you need to go over to Brewers Outlet right now. Imports, domestics, microbrews, best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drinks, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. And people, the pickle bar is indeed second to none, led by the barrels and the dills. Right? There are other great ones, too. I mean, Corey always does a great job every time we see him, where I get a sampler. And the pickle bar is awesome. All right, that's all at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. And the Steve Jones Show is driven by Sunbury Motors. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Got a lot going on. High school football tonight, including the game you'll hear on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Shikellamy hitting the road to take on Loyal Sock. Kevin Herr will have the call with Dick Hort. Sealands Grove will be at Southern Columbia on Eagle 107. And, of course, Pat O'Brien and Ryan Brandt will have that call. And then it'll be Mount Carmel and Lewisburg. 100.9 The Valley. It was great to have Greg Wetzel on the show yesterday to preview that one. So that's what we have coming up on our show today. Neil Kulong is going to join us to preview the Steelers and the Browns. We're going to have Lou Prado in the final hour as we look back at the history of Penn State and Pitt. Coming up, Beth Moen. She has the Monday night game between the Lions and the Jets. We'll talk with Beth in a moment as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Great to have you with us, brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury. I'm very pleased to bring in an old friend. No offense, but we do go back 25 years. Beth Moen, she has the Lions and the Jets on Monday Night Football. Beth, welcome, and it's great to hear you again.
Hey, Steve, how are you doing? Good to be on.
I'm doing great, Beth. You know, I have to ask you, when it comes to a regular season game, you've done the Raiders preseason games for years. How tough is it doing it when you've got 90 available individuals on each side?
The game board gets a little crowded, Steve. And actually, once you can turn it over to the regular season, when you've got 40 less people to deal with names and numbers and things, it's quite a big difference. You know, honestly, it's kind of cool to sort of everybody this time of year has that hope of big things to come, and all those guys, you know, that are on the cusp or that are fighting to keep their dream alive, are fighting to make that roster. You know, it's compelling to be in it and to be around camp and be around those guys and hear their stories, and you really start pulling for guys to, you know, to make it all come true, because they really do put so much into it.
What was the read, Beth, you got from John Gruden's preseason as to how he handled it, and you watched it play out in front of you every single game?
You know, he was so energetic and so enthusiastic, and really, you know, I was around Rich Gannon a lot, who still has a good relationship with Coach, and of course, Matt Millen, the three of us all with Pennsylvania ties. It was a lot of fun. You know, Rich spent a lot of time with him and a lot of time around the team, and just he was most impressed with how much it meant to Coach Gruden to be back with the Raiders and to be back with the guys. There was a ton of turnover. He brought in a lot of veterans. I think the 90-man roster during preseason, half of it was new guys from the year before through free agency in the draft. And everybody was just talking so much about you know, the different work ethic and the different commitment that was involved when Gruden was around, and sort of that leadership quality. You know, there are certain coaches you just want to follow. You want to give them your best, and that was the sense you got whenever you were around Gruden.
What was your sense on Derek Carr and the comfort that he has with what John Gruden wants to do?
You know, from what we heard, you know, think of Gruden when he was doing his quarterback camps, and you know, he had his sort of monitor wall around him and sort of this little bunker in his office just watching tape and breaking down film. And it's my understanding that Derek set up the same thing in the tape room, just a little bunker for him to get in there. And he talked a lot about being very similar to Gruden in that, you know, that work ethic and that mentality. I want to dive into this playbook and have it so locked down by the time the regular season rolls around. You know, Steve, there's so much now in these offensive playbooks. And these guys, even when you talk about a youngster like Sam Darnold, I want command and presence in that huddle, and I want to get to the line with as much time as I can to digest what I'm looking at, to read that defense, and to see if it's go time or if we need to make some adjustments. And I think Derek is really ready and anxious to get rolling.
You referenced Sam Darnold there. You're going to see him starting for the Jets. Matthew Stafford on the other side for the Detroit Lions. Stafford has brilliantly been able to leverage the quarterback role into a big contract without winning a playoff game. And then there's Sam Darnold. I want to start with Darnold. What's the impression that you have of him? Because obviously, I mean, I saw him in the Rose Bowl first day, so I know what my impression is.
You know, I think we sort of knew from that Rose Bowl and really even last year, obviously he's got to clean up the turnovers, and he spent a lot of time on that. I think you're going to see him a lot more with two hands on the ball at all times, because, you know, what we saw in the Rose Bowl, his ability to make something when there doesn't seem to be anything there, his ability to be aggressive and to use his legs to carve out a little space and carve out a little more time to find the open man. I think the Jets sort of knew that they were going to get that. Really spending a little time watching him in camp, having a chance to sit down through some interviews. Brian Griese and I were there to do a rehearsal game with the other Monday Night Football crew. It's just this California cool with the work ethic of a guy who, you know, almost has that chip on his shoulder. I never really was the best guy growing up. I'm hungry to prove that I can be the best guy, and totally unencumbered by the fact that he's about to become the new prince of New York City. Steve, the thing that really sticks with me is how much he appreciated being around McCown and Teddy Bridgewater and absorbing everything he could and not being distracted by anything outside the team.
Right, and you and I both know, I mean, even in our respective professions, mentors are so important. For him to be at a young age to understand how important it was to be mentored, I think does tell you something about him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know, just going through his background a little bit, he was probably, according to the so-called experts, right, he was probably like the fifth best high school quarterback coming out of Southern California, and then, you know, within a year he's the starter at USC, and all of a sudden he's the number three draft pick. They're trading up to get him to come to New York. So just the progression that he's made and his willingness, I think a lot of it, Steve, comes from his family. They were all athletes. They all knew that, hey, you know, you're not special talking about it. You can become special by doing it. And that's sort of the impression I get from Sam, and his development as a player has a lot to do with the people around him and who he has chosen to listen to.
I know I'm going to ask you about Georgia in a moment, but we'll talk about a former Georgia quarterback before we get to Between the Hedges, and that's Matthew Stafford. What's the impression that Brian Griese and you have been able to form about a storyline on Matthew Stafford heading into this game?
You know, I think for the first time in a while, he's got a running game that can complement him. So you know, just a statistic to throw out there, I think they ran like 37% of their snaps last year. That's it. So I'm interested to see how they can blend in, you know, Kerryon Johnson. I was real impressed watching him last year at Auburn. You've got LeGarrette Blount for some short yardage situations, which they weren't very good at. I think in particular the Pittsburgh game stands out, you know, making plays in the red zone. They've got Theo Riddick to throw to on third down. So I'm really interested to see how Stafford can blend that, because we know what he can do. And, you know, the other thing that jumps out at me is I think within like 18 months, he's gone from the highest paid guy in the league to the third highest paid in his division. So that's the speed of the NFL right now and the direction we're headed.
Oh, my goodness. That's the best statement I've heard about that from anybody all summer. You just did a game, speaking of his alma mater, Between the Hedges. Now, I've done a Penn State-Georgia game, but it was a bowl game, so I've never been to Athens. What was the experience like being in there? And then I want to ask you about Georgia itself.
You know, it's one of those places that I've always been fascinated by, and there's a certain allure, a certain, I think, drama about, you know, Between the Hedges and that Sanford Stadium, which is right there in the middle of campus. And that was the first time I had called a game there. I loved it. I thought it was terrific. It's just one of those places where there's kind of a special feel to it, and there's so much energy around that program right now. That, I mean, there were freshmen all over the field, you know, by midway through the second quarter. So it was curious to hear Kirby Smart talk about the new redshirt rule as not having as big an impact as some people might think. I think part of the reason for that, Steve, is they have so many freshmen that are ready to play now. I think, though, that's going to have an impact around the country. You can take a look at a few guys in a blowout early season non-conference matchup and possibly be able to utilize them in certain situations later in the year without taking off that red shirt or, you know, still having a chance to see him play.
Or in a bowl game.
Yeah.
I mean, it could change the dynamics of a bowl game where suddenly, let's do a Christian McCaffrey, Leonard Fournette, I'm going to forego my bowl game to work on the NFL. That opens the door maybe for a, quote, hotshot freshman that can step in and maybe bring some juice and life to a bowl game.
You know, you're right. That could actually, in some respects, almost turn into a sneak peek at your spring practice in the next year if you can utilize a lot more of those guys.
Right, and I find the rule interesting. I also think it's going to be very interesting to see how Jalen Hurts handles it, because he could play four games at Alabama. He still has, and then leave, and he still has 2 years remaining.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, there's some quarterbacks around. You know, I think we'll find out more even about the Georgia situation. How much will Justin Fields play in a close game, possibly on the road at South Carolina? You know, as you know, we're in a little different era right now, and guys want to play right away. And what always intrigues me, Steve, is the confidence of some guys coming out of high school, not necessarily caring what the depth chart looks like above them.
Right.
As opposed to maybe going somewhere else where they do have a legitimate shot at starting right away. So I'm always intrigued by that.
Well, I have to ask you the obligatory question, which, you know, I mean, you and I go back to when you were doing Lady Lion basketball here at Penn State. So we've known each other for a long time. You've handled every assignment with incredible professionalism, but you know darn well, while you and I look at each other as colleagues, people are not going to look at Beth Mowins the same for obvious reasons. What's allowed you to handle it with such ease, and what's allowed you to brush aside any criticism and say, hey, I know what I'm doing?
Yeah. You know, I think there are a few things. First and foremost, growing up playing sports my whole life, my dad was a coach, three brothers, all the little kids, boys and girls in my neighborhood, we all played sports. And so I, from a very early age, I never cared that I might be the only girl or the only woman in the room. Most of the time, I don't even notice unless somebody points it out. I think there's a comfort level in that. I think there's a comfort level in, you know, I've been around the game just as much as anybody else. So, you know, the language of the game, the strategy of the game, you know, I've always been very comfortable with that. Social media changes things a lot. When I'm on a college campus, that's the first question I get asked from young people. How do you deal with all the negativity? Whereas people of our generation, they want to know how you got to where you are, or what should I do to get better? And so, I avoid the negativity at all costs. You know, there was a saying that there was a women's summit this year at the NFL Super Bowl, at the Super Bowl, and their phrase was, "Who's in your huddle?" And I really have taken that to heart. And we all have an opportunity to choose. Think the visual of the huddle. And the fans are, you know, fans out there on social media. They don't necessarily, their opinions anyways, don't necessarily matter. It's all about those guys in your huddle. That's who I concern myself with when it comes to calling a game as well. I want my teammates to respect me. I want other men and women that do this job, I'd like to try and earn their respect. And you know, you want to please the people that hire you to do the job. So that's kind of, you know, what the way I've always approached it. And you don't have to look for the negativity, the first and foremost.
Well, you know darn well in this chair, you earned that about 25 years ago. So that was a long time ago.
Oh man, good times. Good times in Central PA.
It sure was. Beth, great respect for your work as always. Thanks so much for the time. You're going to be terrific on Monday night. What's the next college assignment, by the way?
Actually, that is an unknown. We now is the time of year we don't start finding out until, you know, maybe the week before. So I'm hoping at some point there will be a trip to Happy Valley in there down the road.
We hope so, too. Beth, thanks so much. You'll be terrific on Monday night, and appreciate your time very, very much.
Thank you, Steve.
Beth Mowins, ESPN. Neil Kulong, next half hour, brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. We're in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
If you want to have a fun day and have less than perfect credit, you have to drive a Hyundai from Sunbury Motors Hyundai. Sunbury Motors Hyundai has 17 2018 Hyundai Elantras picked out for anyone who has less than perfect credit. Every new Hyundai comes with a 10-year, 100,000-mile bumper-to-bumper warranty and Hyundai Assurance. Sunbury Motors Hyundai will work hard to get you approved on a brand new Hyundai Elantra. Bankrupt, divorced, slow pay should not be an issue at Sunbury Motors Hyundai. Why settle for a used vehicle when you can bring your bruised credit to Sunbury Motors Hyundai? 17 2018 Hyundai Elantras picked out for anyone who has less than perfect credit. If you want to have a fun day and have less than perfect credit, you have to drive a Hyundai from Sunbury Motors Hyundai. Sunbury Motors Hyundai in the black building on North 4th Street in Sunbury. 17 2018 Hyundai Elantras picked out for anyone who has less than perfect credit. If you want to have a fun day and have less than perfect credit, you have to drive a Hyundai from Sunbury Motors Hyundai.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection. Imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
It is another great Friday in the Valley. It's great to be with you today on News Radio 1070 WKOK. And today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury. Celebrate the weekend. Celebrate college and pro football. You want to kick back and enjoy. You also want to make sure you're fully stocked. Brewers Outlet is the place to go. As my broadcast partner Jack Ham would say, no doubt about it. All right. Imports, domestics, microbrews, best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drinks, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. The bags are right there at the register as you exit. And the pickle bar, which sometimes is used to settle wagers. The pickle bar is indeed second to none, led by the Barrels and the Dills. It's all at Brewer's Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. And the Steve Jones Show is driven by Sunbury Motors, because I am in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. 103 years of excellence. That tells you all you need to know. When you're in business for 103 years and you have people that trust you all over the valley, you've then done something very special. That's Sunbury Motors. Hey, high school football coming up tonight. It's Shikellamy at Loyal Sock. You'll hear that game here on News Radio 1070 WKOK with Kevin Hur and the coach, Dick Hort. Then coming up tonight on 100.9, the Valley, Mount Carmel will be at Lewisburg. And Greg Wetzel and crew will have that game for you tonight. Lewisburg's at home tonight. And then Pat O'Brien, Ryan Brandt will be at Southern Columbia tonight. Sealands Grove and Southern Columbia on Eagle 107. Speaking of Eagle 107, last night, of course, was the Eagles winning the opener, 18-12 over the Falcons. Staying with Eagle 107, don't forget tomorrow, it'll be Doug Birdsong, Kevin Hur with the call of Bucknell football as they take on Sacred Heart at Christie coming up tomorrow. Go to the game. We strongly encourage you to do that. Bring your radios with you to listen to Doug and Kevin on Eagle 107 tomorrow. And then 100.9, the Valley will have the Steelers and the Browns coming up on Sunday. So there's a lot going on our airwaves. Let's get to this day in sports history. Then we'll transition over to Neil Coulong and talk about the Steelers and the Le'Veon Bell situation. On this day in sports history in 1963, the National Professional Football Hall of Fame was dedicated in Canton, Ohio. On this date, 1979, the Entertainment and Sports Programming Network made its debut on cable TV, a.k.a. ESPN. And our thanks to Beth Mullins of ESPN, who joined us in the previous half hour to preview their first Monday night game between Detroit and the Jets. 1986, Dan Marino of the Dolphins threw his 100th career touchdown pass in only his 44th NFL game, which set an NFL record. 1998, Mark McGwire set a new Major League Baseball record at that time for the most home runs in a single season. He hit his 62nd, surpassing the previous mark of Roger Maris, who hit 61 in 1961. All right, Steelers and Browns. You'll hear it on 100.9 The Valley coming up on Sunday. Neil Coulong joins us from just outside of Le'Veon Bell's home, where he's been in watch mode now for the last few weeks. There's been no activity. Neil, welcome to the show.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
All right. Kevin Colbert, of course, is, quote, disappointed he's not there. You and I both expected that he would not be standing there on this particular day. What's the sense and the feel as to when Le'Veon Bell might mystically and magically show up?
You know, this is really, I think we've entered into a real difficult to predict air now. If you look at it strategically, I'd imagine the only reason Bell wouldn't show up is to not get hurt and to not play. Logically speaking, there's no sense in him missing just one game if that's what he wants to do. He may as well sit out all 10 before he has to report if he wants to get credit for this year. So the fact he didn't show up yesterday was really a surprise to me, even though he might have kind of hinted at it the other day. But I would imagine everybody kind of thought he was going to come on Monday. To me, that kind of sets up a retroactive look at this whole thing. You have to think that they were involved in some way, and at least they would have known that this was his intention, that he wasn't going. And if that's the case, you pretty much have to trade him. I mean, ask Oakland what can happen.
Yep.
If you keep on to a player that you can't sign for too long, then you're not getting any value for this season at all, and you carried a pretty significant cap charge this entire way. I mean, there are a lot of small things that might not matter too much, but the little things, little details that come with this could be a problem. The bottom line is you had to have gotten a sense that he wasn't going to show up if he wasn't going to. And if you knew that, why didn't you trade him? I don't think there was really a whole lot of value keeping him at all.
No, and what's interesting about what the Raiders did, you can tell John Gruden shopped Khalil Mack and was doing everything he could to try and trade him to a somebody who would not be a playoff team. And he actually traded him to a team in Chicago that actually might be good enough to get there because he wants the higher draft picks. He doesn't want to get a pick. Hey, we traded him to the Packers and we got a 28.
Yeah, that's such a gamble to take in today's NFL,
yes.
Too. I mean, there are plenty of teams that it seems like, at least for 1 year, the one thing they really needed was the shot in the arm of the new coach. You put the new coach in there, things totally change around. I mean, let's keep in mind, if we look at this from a decade-long perspective, we're used to saying the Raiders aren't very good. The Raiders were a pretty good team in 2016.
Yeah.
You know, they had a high seed going into the playoffs. I think they would have probably made a little bit more noise than they did had Carr not gotten hurt late in the year.
That's right.
The roster that they have is built to be able to compete to some degree. At least it was that way until John Gruden kind of took over. That entire situation, it's easy to poke fun of. It's easy to look at from just one very narrow perspective. But what I can't get around is it really isn't another way that I can look at as being comprehensible than the Raiders just don't have any money. There's no way that you don't pay Khalil Mack. And if you had intended to sign him, if you felt that you were close, you would have gotten a deal done. If you weren't close at all, the way it kind of seems like they must not have been, you should have traded him a long time ago. You're trading him before the start of the season. I mean, I don't know what you plan to do, but the picks that you're getting are not going to help you this season. So the whole situation is just weird, and it's one we're probably going to talk about for a long time. But I agree with you. I think Chicago might be in a little bit better of a position than people want to think that they are. They gave up quite a bit, but that's a player you give up a lot for, plain and simple.
Who would be willing to pay Le'Veon Bell?
Probably a team that has the cap space in the future years to do it. My guess, going into free agency last season, that the two teams I thought were pretty much destined for him, the 49ers and the Jets. At that point, both of those teams had really not a whole lot of money committed long-term to several positions, and they were in need for a marquee running back to kind of help transition a new quarterback, to help usher in a rookie quarterback. With the Jerick McKinnon signing in San Francisco, I backed away from them a little bit just because it was probably a little bit more money than I think they would want to have to spend it for two running backs. And the Jets don't have anybody. I mean, there really isn't any significant money being committed to the Jets over a significant period of time. And to illustrate that, the whole Teddy Bridgewater situation, Bridgewater was one of their highest paid players.
That's right.
He was only set to make $5 million. He's in their top third, I think, of salary. So they don't have him on the books anymore, and they don't really have anybody long term. Bell would be a guy that they could pay. Bell would be a player that they pretty much have to overpay considering where they are with the cap. And they probably could use a player like him, considering you've got a good young quarterback there. Bell would be a great outlet option for that, also helping establish a running game that we haven't really seen in New York since Rex was there.
All right, so now where do the Steelers go? Because obviously they went through a preseason looking at all this. Are you comfortable with what the Steelers have for a running game?
I think you have to look at it two ways. One, I was being kind of tongue-in-cheek with my earlier comment. I think the Steelers have known that Bell wasn't going to show up, and they've prepared accordingly for that. They aren't going to tell the media that, but I really feel they had to have known that this was a very strong possibility. It's not like Bell just decided the day before practice started that, I don't want to go. Never mind, I'll take another week off. They had a good idea this was going on. I think they've sunk a lot of money into their offensive line coach, with the idea that they can plug in a lot of different guys and be able to get the job done. They're not all going to be game breakers the way that Bell is. Bell certainly is a step above, at least, of James Conner. But you have to like what you've seen of Conner to this point. I think they will be able to run the ball. I think their overall offense probably isn't going to be as dynamic and deadly as it is, but they've got a ton of playmakers out there that can do things with the ball in their hands. And they're going to make an offense in which they can get Antonio Brown the ball basically when they need him to. Juju Smith-Schuster is a player that's on the rise. I think he's going to have a big season. They like what they have with Vance McDonald now that he's had, well, at least some of a training camp under his belt.
Sure.
They've got playmakers that can help bolster the running game. I don't think Connor is going to be asked to do a whole lot except for run a lot of pretty simple stuff behind a very good offensive line.
All right. Yeah, I know you like the offensive line. Defensively, all right, where do you stand with the defense? What do you think they are capable of this season?
To me, it really just seems like such a boom or bust situation for them. They did a lot of different things with their defense this offseason that's not just personnel-based. Morgan Burnett is not the kind of player the Steelers would have brought in free agency in the past, not because he is or is not a good player. He just doesn't fit what they did. Signing like that really kind of signifies they're looking to change things up at a pretty dramatic level. There are special teams implications behind the idea of keeping six safeties on a roster. In my opinion, and a lot of the special team stuff will kind of flesh itself out here, but if you can't set up wedges anymore, my guess would be the value of a bigger guy in special teams goes down quite a bit. The Steelers might be kind of attacking it from, let's get more speed, more agility on the field, so let's keep another safety. We're not great at outside linebacker anyway. We don't have a whole lot of depth there. We can get by with three of them at least right away. But I really think at the same time, keeping six safeties suggests to me that they're going to run a lot of three safety stuff. Whether that's in a your typical nickel package, or they're really going to go deeper into the dollar package, like they're calling it, putting seven defensive backs out there means probably at least three of them are safety. So defensively, I think it's going to be a very different look than what we've seen, and I kind of cringe thinking about how offenses are going to respond to that. It is very different to see that kind of a look all the time. If they're capable of winning the line of scrimmage, which is really kind of where their money is on defense, they're able to fill gaps and stop the run, it's going to be really hard to throw against them. You could be looking at a very dramatically improved defensive team just from a few schematic and coaching changes.
Do they have enough pass rush to make a difference?
The real thing with the Steelers pass rush, I've gone back and forth on this. The number that they hit last year, what was it, 52, 53, somewhere in there,
right.
Third in the league, it came from all over the place. Mm-hmm. And the one spot you didn't really see it coming from was where they typically do it. Their edge rushers were not really the dominant pass rushers that we would kind of expect them to be on a Steelers team. But it wasn't necessarily because those guys couldn't rush. You've heard me talk about Bud Dupree plenty often. But it was more they sent different looks a lot. I mean, that's part of the reason why your nickel defensive back has six sacks or whatever Hilton had last season. Cam Hayward is all but unstoppable. He's probably the most underrated player in the game, in my opinion. He's going to get his. 10 sacks from him is not going to be much of a surprise because he's a dominant player. It's getting 4 and 5 sacks from several players across the roster that really kind of seems to be marking where they're going defensively. And I think that pass rush, if they're able to mix it up enough, they can generate enough of it. We've seen it before. It's got to be difference-making, though. I mean, really, too many situations where they get a big sack in the fourth quarter of a game where they gave up 35 points, that doesn't have quite the awe-inspiring feeling that we've seen from this team in the past. I think they need to tighten up a lot of things to let that pass rush stand out a little bit more than it has.
All right, so now finally the opener comes up, and they got the Browns coming up Sunday at 1. Yes, indeed, it's the brand new Cleveland Browns. Neil?
I'll be honest. This was the one team I did not want to see the Steelers play in week one.
Right.
I say that not because I think Jarvis Landry is as great as he seems to think that he is, or that Tyrod Taylor is one of the best quarterbacks in the game that no one considers. I think it's simply because they injected their roster with actual NFL talent. I know that seems simple, but they went a different route last year, and we saw that on the field. I don't think either the Steelers or the Browns could have played worse in their week one game last year, and it really was because the Browns had a completely inferior quarterback playing. That was the only reason the Browns lost that game.
That's
they
right.
should have won.
Right.
A lot of different ways they should have won. I think they correct that mistake now, and with the amount of players that they've brought in, I'm not even speaking to talent. I'm just saying overall, things are so different in the Browns right now, and they have a proven offensive coordinator that can probably generate more with Tyrod Taylor, Jarvis Landry, than they did with DeShone Kizer and whoever it is that they trotted out there last year. They're going to be able to do more offensively. And the Steelers, you think that they have something of an idea because they know Haley and this and that. different personnel. They're going to drop completely different stuff. And bottom line is, Hugh Jackson and his staff has a much better idea of what they're getting in week one than Mike Tomlin and his staff do in their week one. I think the Browns are going to steal this simply because the Steelers aren't going to know really who they're going up against, and the Browns are going to have a much better idea of how to plan for this game. The Steelers are going to get beat really because they're not going to have the opportunity to be as prepared. That said, I don't think the Browns are better than probably 6-10 this season, but that's a huge improvement for where they were. I think they're going to get the first one in week one. I really do.
Okay, because I felt that with good quarterback play last year, I didn't say great or awesome, I mean, with good quarterback play, I thought the Browns would have won 4 or 5 games last year.
I mean, Kizer, look at week one alone. Watch that back. I mean, Kizer literally walked into 5 of those 7 sacks. 2 of them from T.J. Watt. They're just, you have no idea what he's doing, and you understand why Jackson benched and restarted Kizer 4 or 5 times throughout the year. They don't have anybody else, and he was completely inadequate for the position. I mean, I don't think we saw a quarterback that overwhelmed in his position, and that includes all the guys the Browns have had, you know? Overall, if they had a middle talent, which I think Tyrod Taylor is, he's a veteran with experience. He knows what he's doing. He's not a dominant quarterback by any stretch of the imagination, but right. You simply just improve by, you know, addition by subtraction, put an average player in there. They win a couple of those games, exactly what you said. And I think they have much more of a reason to be hungry for it this year. And playing at home against your hated rival in week one is a great way to kind of send that message. Not the game I wanted the Steelers to play in week one.
What are you looking for in the first week of the season in terms of style of play in this league? And I'm really going to, in particular, about how it's going to be officiated.
It's hard to say just because you get into, they're calling this a lot because it's the preseason. That doesn't necessarily mean they're not going to call it in the regular season.
Right.
So there's a middle ground reasonably that you're going to find in there. And I think with that, you're going to see a couple games swung in a pretty decisive way on, I don't want to call it ill time. Let's just say that the flag is thrown, so the flag is thrown. If it's 3rd and 14, that gives a team an extra set of downs. They end up scoring and winning by 3. I think we're going to see an example or two of that. And it brings to light how often it did or did not happen in the past. But I think it's going to be done in such a way that everyone who's kind of expecting this to happen is going to jump all over it. So in my opinion, I think it's going to be the narrative. I'm going to wait and see whether it really is as big a deal as people are going to make it out to be. In other words, kind of like when we had the replacement officials a couple of years ago, this holding call that might have been called at another time really wasn't all that big of a deal. But the fail Mary in the end zone, you know, captured all the headlines and
sure.
kind of, you know, spoke for the overall product that people were seeing. I'm not sure it's going to be that extreme, but I think people are going to react to it in that way because of a couple calls that may or may not have been made in the past, but people are going to be kind of oversensitive to it.
As always, Neil, thanks. Great to have you on board.
Definitely. Thanks for having me.
Neil Coulong, USA Today. All right, don't forget high school football coming up tonight. Penn State and Pitt coming up tomorrow. So you got Chickalamy at Loyal Sock tonight on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Sealands Groves at Southern Columbia on Eagle 107. And Lewisburg's got a big one tonight as well because they've got on 100.9 The Valley, they're going to have Mount Carmel coming up this evening. And, of course, they'll have the Steelers game on Sunday. Penn State football tomorrow. Penn State at Pitt. 8 o'clock the kickoff. Airtime 6:30 here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Eagle 107 tomorrow. We'll have Sacred Heart Bucknell with Doug and Kevin over at Christine. We strongly encourage you to go over and watch that. I think Joe Susan, has done a great job working that program, and I think tomorrow's going to be a big game for them tomorrow. We're looking forward to it. All right, next hour, Penn State and Pitt. The 99th game is tomorrow. Now, Lou Prado and I have not seen all 99 games. Lou might be closer to it than I am. All brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the Beverage Supermarket, and, of course, we're in the Sunbury Motors Studio on News Radio 1070 WKOK.